This place here that we now refer to as Gupta Govardhan, Sri Gupta Govardhan, and the line of Guru Maharaj's thought, that we know that nearby is Charlie and Anchan, the American Thai couple. They built the heritage house. And they were trying to tell us that the former proprietor, we had no idea at the time. They were saying, we're very concerned about who's going to take this property after him, because he passed away in 2012. And I was like, why? And they said, well, it was his lifelong dream that it would be a school. And we're thinking like, oh, well, that's interesting. And they go, a Sanskrit school. And I was thinking like, you're kidding. And they go, no, he was a Sanskrit teacher. I was saying, really? Then I realized, he's not Thai, he's from America. And Thai pronunciation, lady kept saying, Fitz. Right? And Fitz would want that the Sanskrit mantra and that building was a library where Ananga and everyone, that was supposed to be the library and classroom and so many other things. So, and then as I was moving in and like looking through closets and papers, I saw this paperwork from the University of California at Berkeley, which is famous for their South Asian Studies department where they teach Sanskrit. And then it said, J. Fritz Stahl. And I thought, oh, Prabhupada, many years ago in 1969 or so, he had a back and forth with a professor from the university named Fritz Stahl. They published a pamphlet of the correspondence called The Stahl Correspondence. And it was over this issue, like, what constitutes kirtan? Because the Gita, when you have satatam kirtayanto mam yat tantastra vidhavrita namasyantasya mam nitya yuktu pasate, I believe that's one. And other places, but like kirtan. So Prabhupada's position was, kirtan is meant for Krishna, right? And he was saying, yes, I understand that, the Sanskrit. He said, but I think it's for other gods also. When Prabhupada said, no. The kirtan's for Krishna. And actually, besides Prabhupada's right, even within Bengal, like, you won't hear really from proper people like Shiva Bhakti, right? You'll hear Vishnu Bhakti. You'll hear Krishna Prem. Prem you'll only hear with Krishna. They'll say, no, someone else. If they're doing that, they've, what is it? Malappropriate, or when you appropriate something?
Misappropriated.
No, Prem is only connected with Krishna. There can be Gopi Prem or Krishna Prem, but there's not Prem, there's not for the others. You have Vishnu Bhakti, and these are fine things. So kirtan, and I think that music, is really associated with Krishna. And one devotee who is a disciple of Guru Maharaj, who follows beauty over power and all these talks, his name is Trilokanath Prabhu. He lives in Holland, I think, actually. Yeah, I wonder if he was at that. If he'd known, he probably would have went. But maybe, I don't know where he lives now, but he just wrote me an email saying he was reading through or listening to Guru Maharaj, and Guru Maharaj would quote this famous verse that says, it's kind of the verse that explains what Krishna means, the name Krishna. And it starts with, Krishi Bhu Vachaka Shabda Na something, Karin Ochite, something like that. But I know the first word, Krishi Bhu Vachaka Shabda. I'm saying, what is meant by this Krishi? Krish, you know, chaos, Krish. And so Guru Maharaj will say sometimes, Krish means, like Karshati means attraction, like gravitational pull, but magnetism, but not in the sense of magnetism or gravity, but how? Beauty. On account of Krishna's beauty, everyone is irresistibly drawn to the central conception of the absolute Krishna conception. But that's Krish. So Krish means like drawn to the center, and then Na means who then nourishes, gives satisfaction, fulfillment. So, and then I thought, in this world, there are things, persons, places, or things that compel us, like the Krish, the principle, we're attracted to them for various reasons. It could be a person, a place, we hear about a thing, you know, an object that you can possess, whatever. So we're attracted to that. And then when we come in connection with it, our hope is that we will experience satisfaction, fulfillment, etc. But if we're brutally honest with ourselves, what to speak of others? Usually we just lie to other people. That's like our default mode. How are you doing? Pretty good. How about you? You know, it's all lies, you know, but anyway, I digress. But we don't want to tell another person or a place or a thing that it really didn't deliver on the satisfaction, fulfillment thing, that new thing that you bought or that new person you met, the new place you went to. It always ends up somehow being, if we're just brutally honest, disappointing. So the promise, you could say, of Krishna conception is that, first of all, he's irresistibly charming, like, what would Prabhupada say? You know, all attractive, he liked to say. But Guru Maharaj, and he'd go like, ahoy tukiya pratyata, which is in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, Savai pungsam puro dharmo yato bhaktir adhoksaje. And as Guru Maharaj will point out, it's not an accident or poetic convenience that the name adhoksaja is being invoked or given here. Adhoksaje. Ahoy tuki apratyata yayatma supersediti. That means like satisfaction. You could say super satisfaction. But what it's saying, Prabhupada would say, so what is Krishna? Ahoy tuki apratyata. You know, he'd say causeless and, what was the other one? He had another word. The two things. Ahoy tuki apratyata. Causeless and... No, I'm talking about Prabhupada. He would say, I forget the other word he would use. That's Guru Maharaj, and you stole my punchline. Swami Maharaj would say, see, it shows you how far we've gone in a sense. I can't remember his rejoinder. Ahoy tuki, uninterrupted. That's what he would say. Causeless and uninterrupted, you know, so pure devotion is causeless and uninterrupted. I believe, isn't that the word he would say? Uninterrupted. Yeah. Right. But when we came to Guru Maharaj, he would say, causeless and irresistible. And you'll hear on one tape where I can't understand it because Bengalis cannot say zah. So they say ja. So they're saying irresistible, you know, and I'm saying, are you saying beyond register, what can be, you know? And Guru Maharaj is saying, no, I'm saying irresistible. And I'm going, Guru Maharaj, you can tell, he's like annoyed with me. He's going, I'm saying irresistible. Like, why? And I'm like, all right, I just wanted to get it right, you know? But that's what he was saying. He's irresistible. And I thought, that's really interesting. It's very profound. And not to discount what Srila Prabhupada is saying, but it's another perspective. And so when he says, and in a sense, he's combining the two, like, and the irresistible part reveals something, because actual pure devotees, so he's saying, Krishna's going to deliver on the pleasure of the satisfaction beyond your wildest dreams. He's Anandamurti, Ananda, Akila Rasamrita Murti, you know, Rasaraj, etc. So he's going to deliver on that beyond what you even know what pleasure is. But the pure devotees, that's not their motive. Like all the devotees in the early stage, they're thinking like they're chanting and they're going to have some kind of mystical experience. And not to say that they don't. I would just say it's a relatively mystical experience. But and it is. They do experience something. But they're thinking, I'm going to chant, and you're reading all the, and like and being like drowning in an ocean of ecstasy, and you know, the name is going to taste like all these things that you read about. They're wondering like, Kabe habe bolo se din amar, like when is that going to happen, you know? And interestingly, Vishwanath says, I find some of the things he says humorous, and I hope I'm not the only one, because if that's, then I'm in deep trouble. But he says, actually, Krishna could do it immediately. You'd be tasting, you know, like Rupa Goswami says, you know, one tongue would be insufficient, you would desire millions of tongues, millions of ears to capture all the... He said, and now I'm paraphrasing, but Vishwanath says, but he knows you can do better than this neophyte nam, or when... Sagar Maharaj and Guru Maharaj were joking about a lack of noise instead of like 100,000 names, saying a lack of noise, kalahol. And Janardhan Maharaj said to Govinda Maharaj once, he said, you are more immersive. Swami Maharaj asked us to chant 16 rounds of Nam Aparad, and you only asked for four. And that was his way of saying, what are we doing? Right? Because just to be blunt, you know, some devotees say, well, I've been taking Krishna Nam now for 20 years. I'm ready for the, really? You know, Yadvanshana Sri Lalana Charatapo Vihaya Kaman Suchitam Vritam Vrita. Lakshmi Devi did austerities in the Tapovan for lifetimes and wasn't qualified to enter that domain. But you have been mumbling some semblance of Krishna Nam for 10, 15, 20 years, you're ready. No. So what do we hear about the actual devotees? Rather than trying to squeeze some juice out of the holy name or out of, you know, rasa personified for their amusement, taking Krishna to be an objective thing, and taking themselves of subjects, seeing Krishna Nam or Krishna himself as an object for your pleasure, satisfaction. No. The strategy, the first line strategy of the genuine devotees is to resist. Right? If something's coming, to resist that. Not to try and augment it, amplify it, potentiate it, is to resist. Why? You're saying, wait, the neophytes are saying, like, if the slightest glimmer of something that even vaguely resembles appreciation, we're overjoyed or patting ourselves on the back, right? But the genuine devotees, they're resisting. Their first line of defense is resistance. Why? Because Krishna is irresistible. So if you can resist what is coming to you, apparently, in the form of some sentiments, then it's not Krishna. Why? Because Krishna is irresistible. So their line... their strategy is like, I will resist, and if I can resist, then it was something less, then it was something other. But if I'm trying my utmost and earnestly to resist to the best of my ability, but somehow could not, then maybe, just maybe, that transaction had some divine color to it. It was real substantial. And then what? Back to the neophyte. Well, if something by the grace of Guru, Sadhu Shastra Guru Vaishnava comes to them, they're thinking in the aftermath, that was wonderful. What did I do that was the end result? Go over their steps, like in prayer. They had the step and repeat. You do this, then you turn the page, do it again, do it again, do it again. You know, it's a type of a method for printing. So, but this step and repeat idea, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, no. If it was real and genuine, if you try to sustain that experience or have a repeat experience, that's on you, and Krishna will withdraw, because that is arrogant self-assertion, as if it was within your purview to generate these divine experiences by saying, well, that time I read, you know, this chapter, I read this section, I read that, and then something wonderful came to me. Then he's saying, no, then Krishna will withdraw. And when you try, and you'll be left frustrated or even doubtful or whatever it might be, because now the shift has taken place. Now it's you, again, taking yourself to be a subject, Krishna as an object, and trying to have a repeat experience for your amusement. So, interestingly, on this day at the Mott, at Guru Maharaj's insistence, they read, and you think, well, what will they read? Oh, probably the Bhagavad Gita, Chaitanya Charitamritam. And you're like, on Krishna's birthday, he says, read Chaitanya Charitamritam. And that could be a whole subject. But just one thing we learn from that is why? Because that's the only place you're going to get genuine Krishna conception. If you try to go on your own, you're going to end up with something. Oh, and this is why I said that. So Guru Maharaj, when he was a college student, there was a book made by a very famous Bengali gentleman named Shushir Kumar Ghosh. And the Bengali title was Amiya Nimai Charit, and which they published in English as Lord Gauranga. And there was even a society of ladies in Chicago at the end of the 19th century who had like a Gauranga club. You know, and they'd get together and read about Lord Gauranga. So think of it, in the 1890s. But setting that to the side, so Guru Maharaj says, when he was a college student, he read this book. And in his own words, he said, I devoured it like nectar. Then later, when he came to Gaudiya Math, that was before Gaudiya Math, comes to Gaudiya Math, and they bring it up to Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada, what do you think about this book? And he says, and bungala, and if I bungle the bungala, forgive me, but he said something to the effect of Nijaboga Gauranga Gorilla, which translates as he presented the Gauranga of his amusement, what amuses him about all these things, that's what he presented. And interestingly, what he did was an idea that many have had since, where he thought, well, I'm going to take something from Charitamritam, Chaitanya Bhagwat, Chaitanya Mangala, all these different books, and it on its face, it sounds like, oh, well, what would be wrong with that? But Saraswati Thakur, he said, the Guru, a man of real, a genuine devotee will find no substance there. A man of real substance won't find anything nourishing there. Wait. These are the pastimes of Mahaprabhu, as given by Krishnadas, Vrindavan Das, Murari Gupta, right? But he said, no, what is the important part when he said that? Nijabog means what you enjoy, for your own enjoyment. That's not what, Kaviraj Goswami is not presenting what amused him about the pastimes of Mahaprabhu. this is divinely inspired. He said Madan Mohan is moving his arm and causing him to vent or give voice to these things. So then, and Sanatan Goswami Prabhu elsewhere says, you know, Abhaishnava Mukod Girnam Putam Harikatam Ritam Sravanam Naiva Kartavyam Sarpo Chistam Yatapayo. Don't hear Harikata from someone who is what? A Vaishnav, means a non-devotee. But he's saying, but Harikatamritam, he's saying the nectar of hearing about Hari or Krishna. And then we can, well, wait a minute. On the one hand, we're telling everyone, like, this is it. This is what you need to hear. In this world of mortality, the life-giving substance, and in this, you know, immortal life and beyond, you know, and the ultimate nectar, Madhura Rasa, that is in Krishna Katha. The Braja Gopis, we'll see in the Bhagavatam, when they say, when they're feeling separation from Krishna, Tava katam ritam tapta jivanam kavi biriditam kalmasha apaham sravanam mangalam srimadatatam bhuvi grinanti te buridajana. Remember, they're consoling one another. Krishna, and Vishwanath explains it too, he vanishes. And your first, one's first reaction might be, as is sometimes even voice, and they go like, Krishna, why are you so cruel? These are, they're no greater devotees than the Braja Gopis. No one has no more love than they do. They never forget you for a moment. They've totally sacrificed them. The list goes on and on and on. And what is his idea of, you know, fun, you know, or to increase the moon, like to vanish and plunge them in an, they're drowning in an ocean of separation. And he's saying, like, why do you do this? And Vishwanath says, well, because, and I thought about this too, and I recall, because I was thinking, you hear this book, the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's the form of Krishna, it's the book of Krishna. Prabhupada even called the 10th canto the Krishna book. And you're thinking like, oh, so this is going to give us the nectar, that life-giving nectar about Krishna and everything. And you go like, why is the birth pastimes, as we're celebrating today, why is it in the 10th canto? And you're telling me this book has approximately 18,000 slokas. So let's just ballpark and say, so I've got to read 10,000 to get to the birth of Krishna. What to speak of the other thing? To get to his birth, I have to read 10,000 verses, right? Why? I thought, like, shouldn't it be on the first page? You know, I mean, it's that important. You're feeling like, hey, let's not waste any time. Let's go right there. And ironically, today, because I've said similar things before, but I realize it is on the first page. Because my talk is supposed to be how it's not on the first page, right? You understand? This talk builds up to how it's in the 10th canto and everything. And then I'm thinking, and I realize, like, it's not only on the first page, it's the first word of the Bhagavatam, right? Janma yasya yaton vayad itaratascha arteshu. It says janma, like today's janma, astami, means the word. But it's saying, but again, it's profound, because janma doesn't only mean born, but it means the source, origin, the from which everything is coming. So saying janmad yasyataha, like the Vedanta, who is Krishna, from whom everything is coming, like Gita, ahang sarvasya prabhavo mattak sarvam pravartate, etc. But Guru Maharaj parses that incidentally as like everything comes from everything. Oh, all these planets, all that, like, that's a given. What does Guru Maharaj say? He's interpreting what's not obvious. He say, the path to me comes from me also. How? As Mahaprabhu. So from Ahang Sarvasya Prabhavo, Guru Maharaj extracts Mahaprabhu. And now we may understand why in Janmasthami he has you reading Charitamritam about Mahaprabhu. But anyway, that said, so yes, on the first page it does say it, but you have to like really be paying attention or have Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur explaining it to you, to us. But still, so it's all, the groundwork is laid there in this sloka. And very mystical things are there too. You can read it over and over and over and over again. We hear that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur lectured on that sloka once for something like 3 or 4 months. Okay, that's a sound we don't want to hear. Hare Krishna. So think about that. Same sloka every day for 3 or 4 months, word by word. And one, I was wondering about this. I was in Moscow and I had this book on Saraswati Thakur's lectures, and he was just explaining the word like dhimahi and the case and what the case implied and the plurality and like, from this word, and even like half of the word, it was getting so deep, so involved, and my mind, brain, could not process it all. I had to walk around the block for like a half an hour, turn it on vibrate. Oh, I see. Okay. Then that's another thing. But tell him what we're doing and see if he wants to join in or call later, So anyway, then I realized, if one word could send me like around the block 4 times thinking about what is he trying to say, then I could understand 3 or 4 months of him speaking the same sloka. And that's the first one of the Bhagavatam. And then we're told, so 10,000 of these before you get to the appearance of Krishna, right? Why? Why? Because if right away you're told all these things, then who is Krishna? Is he some a man, or a devata, or some sort of god? If you don't have the backstory of Krishna, like then when he appears, you won't get it. So you're not told about his appearance till the 10th canto. There is a verse here and there. What do we hear in the Gita? Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tatvataha. Tyaktva deham punar janma naiti mam eti sorjana. He's saying, one who understands the transcendental nature of my what? Janma, karma, his birth and act. Wait, Krishna has karma? Krishna has birth? We were talking earlier today. What is one of his names? Again in Gita, he says, Ajopisan avyayatma bhutanan ishwaropisan. Although I am unborn, Kunti says also a similar verse. I can't think of it right, but like the unborn takes birth. That's one of his pastimes. Although he's unborn, to take birth. How? And like a baby, karma, he appears to have many different activities he does. But what does he say in the sloka? If you can understand that this is not a mundane birth, not mundane activities, that it's lila, then chaktva deham punard. Then giving up this body, punar janma, the word janma appears again, he's saying, so if you understand my janma is not janma, but lila, then you won't have to experience janma again in this world. You will enter my lila. And in fact, instead of being born in this world, and it's either Sanatan or one of the commentators says, could be Sridhar Swami, but he says, you'll be transferred to the womb of a Braja Gopi and Prapancha Leela, which means within the universes, the pastime going one universe to another. You'll appear in the womb of a Braja Gopi, which means you'll be born as either a Gopi or a Gopa. That's implied in this sloka of the Bhagavad Gita. Right? So he's saying, but to understand this, earlier in the Gita, yada yada hi dharmasya glani bhaviti bharata abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijamyahan. He says, whenever, you know, dharma declines, or you could say, to the point of becoming adharmic, then either I come as an incarnation for course correction. That's why they all have these unique functions. They're not redundant, the avatars of Krishna. They each have some specialty. Nisringa, Vaman, you know, Kurma, Matsya, Braha, etc. So he's saying that, and what do? I reestablish the principles of Dharma. But this is interesting, because in the Bhagavatam, when Narada is chastising Vyas, Vyas is wondering, like, I thought I did everything right. Mahabharata, I compiled the Vyas, I didn't, you know, like, why do I feel like, I feel unfulfilled, I'm dissatisfied, I'm disappointment, I feel disappointed. You know, and Narada is saying, well, you did a great disservice to the world. You know, you're a traitor to the cause. What did I do? You gave religion to the world. What? What wasn't? Just turn off the sound. Do you know how to do that? Apparently not. Right. Like, so, or you go to Skype and you go like, sign out? Yes. Sign out and remember login? That's a choice. But, you know, like, yes, and you're gone. And then it doesn't ring anymore. These are, it is known, right? So he's saying, you gave religion to the world. And we're like, excuse me? Like, what? I thought I was supposed to... He said, no, I mean, it's not your fault. You know, like, it's an inadvertent consequence of giving religion to the world. How so? Like this, that people, rather than getting liberated from material existence, they're going to follow some religious prescriptions you gave, how to live in the world, balance your life, do some yajna, some mantra, give some charity, and live successfully in the material world. No one will want to leave. They'll say, hey, and also, Narada's saying, and it's you, only you can rectify this. Otherwise, I would have done it myself or gone elsewhere. Why? Because you're Veda Vyas, right? And why? Because all these people, if we come with something else, they'll go like, are you a greater authority than Veda Vyas? I don't think so. I'm following what he says. And he says, if you follow these religious principles, you can live successfully in this world. And hopefully, as Prabhupada would say, successfully terminate human existence. But that part they're not very much interested in. So when we would go to India and they'd see we were already like this at a young age, and they go, I got to stop with the impersonation, but they go like, you know, it's dharma, artha, kama, moksha. They go, you know, you start with the dharma and you'll go to the artha and then kama. And after you're exhausted from, you know, and senses are no longer functioning, then you go for moksha. But this going for moksha, you know, so early, that's not good. You know, and I sound like, oh, these are the people Narada was talking about. They're using religion as an excuse to remain bound in material existence. So Narada is saying, this is an inadvertent consequence of your delivering religion to the world. And so, but if you fast forward to the 10th canto, then after Sukadev sings the praises of Madhura Rasa, Krishna's pastimes with Radharani and the Braja Gopis, some sages are like, wait, you told us in the beginning that Narada chastised Vyas for giving religion to the world. And now we're hearing, so, and what's the correction? what appears to be the irreligious activities of a human-like divinity. And as Guru Maharaj said, those sages said, that you've told us that God is like a man, that's too much for like most of the group. But now you're telling us not only is he like a man, but an immoral man. And that, you know, I am very sorry. You know, like they can't digest it. So then that's when Sukadev has to explain, you know, the Ishwaranam, Satya, Vacham, Satyam, you know. You fall, it's the old, you know, do as I say and not as I do. The origin of that. See, if you're the absolute, that works. If you're not, don't invoke that. You know, but he's basically saying, so you don't, you follow the advice of the Ishwaras. You don't imitate their behavior. That will cause degradation. And then the Shiva slok from what again? Mohini Murti, Kurma Avatar. We've discussed this before. Shiva does what? He, all the poison that is the, when you...
The result of the churning.
Yeah, but there's another word for result, like, you know, the stuff that you throw away. Anyway, I can't think of that word. But like when you're churning something, you have the, like the central thing you're trying to get, and then this throwaway. Huh? Yes, but it's a more damning word that I'm looking for. But anyway, so he's saying, Shiva, he drank that. And what was the result? Nilkanta. His throat became blue. Like, it didn't affect him. That was just like for a graphic effect to for everybody's attention. But it doesn't affect him in any way. So they're saying, unless you're like him, and what is Shiva famous for? His name? Dhira. I always, because my name, when I'd ever hear, Prabhupada always go, Dhira, like that, means, he said, sober, undisturbed, unaffected. So they're saying, Achiram, what is it, you know, Vikriditam, Vrajabhadu, Viridam, Jibishnu, Swadan Bito, Anushanaya, Dattabarna, Yedya, Bhakti, Param, Bhagavati, Pratilabdi, Kamam, Hridroga Mashu Api Hinoti Achirena Dhira. If you're not Dhira, then don't try and digest the Madhura Rasa of Krishna. And incidentally, then when is one qualified? Because the Sahajiyas will say, so you're saying, the very thing we're told that's the cure for Hridrogam, you're saying, become cured first and then take the cure? That's their argument. Govinda Maharaj had a great response to that. He said, we know he's a homeopath master. I don't want to say homeopathic master. Yeah, master. And he said, yes, so the medicine has been identified. And he said, but just like in homeopathy, it's not just a question of identifying the medicine. What do they call it? The tincture or the original? I think it's saying, but you have to know its potency, right? Is it, you know, 200, 400, 3200, whatever? And the dosage. He's saying, so yes, this is the cure for that. But Shraddhanvito Anushrinayad Atavarnayaja means, how shall it be delivered? By the expert physician? Yeah, this is that medicine, but if, and I add to that my own, like, you know, potassium cyanide is heart medicine, correct? It is. It is. No, I know you haven't tried it. Well, he's tried everything but that. But I know it is. It's that was one of its functions, right? But we know, to follow this conceit, like, you can imagine you have to get the amount right. You know, like if you're off by a grain, let's say, and I mean that in the pharmaceutical sense, it's death, and that's what you're. So how it can be harmonized? Yes, this is that thing That nectarine substance, the ultimate nectarine substance, madhura rasa, that does what? Cures the heart of hridrogam. But it must be administered by the qualified physician, the right potency, and the right dosage. So we see Bhaktivinoda Thakur as an example. He will say, Chaitanya Shikshamritam, the childhood pastimes of Krishna, they're safe. You can read that, you know, the butter stealing and the Virat Rupa and the, all of these things leading up to other pastimes. And he's saying, and the pastimes of Mahaprabhu, all of this is safe for your Adhikarya. That's the determination from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as echoed by Saraswati Thakur, Guru Maharaj, Gurudev, Prabhupada, everyone in our line who's bona fide. Right? So, what is my point? Then, so that section, though, that has just been broadcast by Sukadev, who is what? He's Dhira, certified earlier in the Bhagavatam, when they go by the pond, and the Dibya Devis are bathing, and when they make eye contact with Sukadev, they don't cover themselves, and later clarified to Vedavyas. He goes, why? But for me, you didn't. They say, in his eyes, not even a remote trace amount of the male gaze. And me? Another matter we're not discussing now. So the great Vedavyas, they're covering themselves more, but not Sukadev. So is this, it's just an interesting anecdote that he, no, it's critical because he will be the loudspeaker for what? The Madhura Rasa pastimes. So he has to be certified as having no interest in mundane eros or eroticism. So that when he does present that, he has the moral authority and spiritual capacity to express that. And he's like, Parinirstitobi Narigunye Uttama Shloka Lilaya Grihita Cheta Rajar Se Akyanam Yadaditavan. He's saying, when he's introduced to the sages, imagine, these sages have assembled from all over the universe to advise Purikit Maharaj what he should do in his last 7 days of his life. Thank you very much. And they've, as Gurudev was saying, they have big beards, you know, like it's a thing, you know, long beard. They've flown in via, you know, mystic yogic power, all of that kind of thing. And then what? And they're all, I advise Don. That was helpful to me. And over here, Tapa. Tapa will be best. And, you know, and they're going on and on and on. And Purikit Maharaj says, I have 7 days. What you're recommending to me, each one of these processes could take a lifetime. So you all get together, present a consensus, and tell me that. And that's when Sukadev arrives. And what do we find? He appears like a mad urchin. Children are mocking him, throwing things at him. And then Sukadev comes in, and Gurudev used to sing these slokas. They're just describing the beauty of Sukadev's body. And he showed me, he goes, this line I took for Guru Maharaj. You know, how beautiful his neck is, his waist, his color. It's just stunning description of Sukadev's beauty. And there's this line there. He said, you see that? He goes, I use that in a sloka glorifying Srila Guru Maharaj. When a 16-year-old naked boy, all the sages stand up. Right? So it's contradicting stereotype. No, with their big long beards and their advanced age, they should be speaking, right? No, they stand up. Why? They can recognize him. Prabhupada says they were expert in the art of physiognomy. They see, as presented in the slokas, that all these auspicious symptoms, that means sulakshana, auspicious signs they see on him. And so they stand and like, they offer him the presidential seat. And they're saying, this is that Sukadev of legend. 16 years in the womb of his mother before coming out. And he's never been under the influence of the mundane. Let's hear, we're telling what helped us. He'd never needed such help. He started off in the Nirguna plane. That's when he says, Parinistitopi Nirgunye Uttama Sloka Lilaya. You all know I'm that legendary Sukadev. I was situated in the Nirguna plane. I mean, beyond the mundane. He said, but, and this is in here too, the beautiful sloka, Nivritta Tarshire Upagiyamanat Bhavosha Dachrota Mano Biramat. Trying to, Sukadev left home, like we're told, he went out when Vyasa is going, oh, my son! We're told only the trees echo, my son, my son, my son. That's all he heard in response. And he's like, it's very sad, actually. It's like early on in the Bhagavatam, some separation. But we're told he was so desperate to find him, he taught some hunters a song, meaning a sloka. And what he taught, they don't even know what it means. But he taught them, all right, say this, you know, Nivritta Tarshire Upagiyamanad Bhavochadat Shrota Manobirama Tadu Uttama Shloka something gana. I forget the last line, it's in here. So he taught to them. When Sukadev, as fate would have it, bumps into them in the forest, they go, oh, this is what he was, they go, Nivritta Tarshire, and you're like, where, you know, because it's saying, Bhava Oshud. Bhava means material existence. It's saying, Uttama Shloka. People say, why so much? The slokas. Krishna, his name is Uttama Shloka. They're not, it's not a hobby or an esoteric pursuit. He's saying, in the Uttama Shlokas about Krishna is the Bhava Oshud, the medicine that cures material existence. And how, and what it, and Vishwanath points this out, he said, you know, normally, and I think we can all agree with this, he said, you know, medicine, it tastes horrible, right? There's and for children, we know, they like try to sweeten it, whatever, but, and whenever you eat, someone gives you something horrible, you know, and you're there like, oh, and they're going, it's good for you. They always say that, you know, it's good for you. And then you know it's going to be horrible, even before you taste it. Right? And then you like throw it in. You're searching for some honey to kind of like take your mind off of that horrible experience. So he's saying here, so the medicine for curing hridrogam, you know, material, is like that. You think, well, if it cures material existence, you know, sign me up. I'm you know, give me my medicine. He's saying, no, it's Mano Abhiram. Abhiram means beautiful. Mano Abhiram, Mano Birama. He said, no, this medicine delights the mind. This is it's the medicine, but it's so beautiful and sweet and nectarine. It's not bitter. He's saying, so you're saying the medicine that cures a material existence is this sweet nectarine substance? Yes. Anyway, it's all couched there in the sloka. And that brings Sukadev back to this situation. And so he said, so I was situated in the Nirguna plane. And then I heard what Uttama Shloka Lilaya, these pastimes of Radha and Krishna. Right? He's already certified, has no mundane erotic tendencies or inclinations. But I heard these pastimes of Radha and Krishna, and as it was if my existence, I was carried away to a plane that I didn't know existed previously. That's how he introduces himself. And then he goes on. And then, so, that's in the second canto. Eight cantos later, still, like, not getting to the point, you know, beating around the kunj. You know, why isn't he delivering the goods? Because this is the way it has to be delivered. Shradhanvato anushrinayat. You have to hear in this way, and then what do you think? And the creation is like this, and the different elements, and, you know, Samkhya, and he's explaining everything, and then on, and it's building, slowly building, and then, you know, what do we hear? second canto, Mukti Arhat Manyata Rupam Swaropena Vibhastiti. What is the real real mukti means when you achieve your swaroop. What is your swaroop? Krishna Das, Radha Dasi, third canto, Vidura, Uddhava, you know, Aho Bakiyam, Stana Kalakutam, like hints at the where Krishna Leela, the mercy, merciful dispensation that will be delivered there. Because what does Vishwanath say when he's saying, Aho, like, Kamva Dalam Shadanam Brajema? If this is how he treats his enemies, then what to speak of his friends? And Vishwanath is saying, so, if that's the result Putana got for being, murderously inimical, then the first thing he says, like, so what if someone's just neutral? It would be better than that, right? Shanta. And then, well, what if someone was like in the mood of, sorry, like, then it would probably be superior to that, right? Yeah. Dasya, all right. Well, what if it was Sakya, like friendship or deep friendship? Well, you could expect it to be, what's the word on the, exponentially, or what do they use there on the Richter scale? Exponentially, right? It doesn't just go like 6 to 7. 7 is 10 times greater than 6. So then you say, so Sakya, then, all right, what if someone had like Vatsalya sentiments? Let's just use that as a rule of thumb. 10 times greater. Then he just doesn't leap to Madhura Rasa. He shows you that even being neutral would yield a superior result to being inimical. So if that's how he treats his enemies, then what to speak of that? So he's taking, but there are little hints of that, third canto, then Kapila, and I'm just roughly summarizing, then the fourth canto, Preetu is there, and what's his name? Dhruva Maharaj, Swamin Kritartosmi Baram Najache. I was searching for broken pieces of glass and I found the most valuable jewel. So it's kind of almost a karma mamisra kind of approach that ends in Shuddha Bhakti. Then fifth, we come Rishav Dev. Tapo dibyam putraka yena sattvam shudhye jasmad brahma sokyam tvanantam. Engage in tapasya. Don't try for the same pleasures available to the stool-eating pigs, that kind of thing. And sixth canto, ajamil, namabas. It's, like developing. Seventh canto, Shuddha Bhakti, Prahlad. Right, na sabritya sabai banik. This isn't a business transaction where I'm serving you to in anticipation of remuneration. No, I'm just, it's my privilege, and from my heart, I'm serving you. Prahlad's insulted at the suggestion of receiving a boon, but it's just to test him. To shine a spotlight on his pure devotion. So seventh canto, Shuddha Bhakti. Not to say that before that there aren't Shuddha Bhaktas, but in this progression. Then the eighth canto, Gajendra, the Vaman avatar. And then Mohini Murti and the Korma avatar, right? Which Gurumara said, what is it really? Delivering the ultimate nectarine substance. Why they may ostensibly be, whether asuric or devic, searching for immortality, but what good is immortality? Like in the Greek myth, the person who got immortality but forgot to ask for youth. And then Maharaj Yayati, similar kind of Puranic thing. But what evolved spiritual personality would just want to live forever? That's, AI. Huh? Right. But that's a seva for him. I'm going to exempt Markandeya Rishi. But I'm saying the devas and the asuras both trying for immortality, live forever, that whole thing. But you have to be a little more specific about that. So what are we told? Guru Maharaj said, why is it? They're ostensive. They want to get the Amrita, that, you know, immortal life. But what is immortal life really? Mukti arhit vanyata rupam swaropena vibhastiti. And your swarup, to enter that world. And what's the highest achievement? The ultimate nectarine substance is not represented in the drops, I mean, ostensibly, of what came out of the pot of Mohini Murti, but it's Madhura Rasa. That's that substance. And what is that? The subject matter of the Bhagavatam. You get to the ninth canto, Ambarish Maharaj, and then culminating in Ramachandra, which is the Surya Bangsha, the sun dynasty, right? So now we get to the 10th canto. Krishna does not appear in that dynasty. He appears in the Chandra Bangsha. And in one chapter, we'll see how beautifully Vishwanath parses these things by saying, and this is his specialty. It'll just say in the beginning chapter, the intro to the Rasalila, it'll say, the moon rose in the eastern horizon. The scent of jasmine was fragrant in the air. Krishna glanced at Yogamaya and gave an indication. Now was the time to, you know, assemble the qualified for the Rasalila. That's all it appears to say. Then Vishwanath will say, the eastern horizon is a feminine personification. That is not the wife of the moon. The moon rose in the eastern horizon. He's saying, this is indicative of what we are about to experience as the paramour pastimes, you know, Parakya Rasa of Radha, Krishna, and the Brajagopi. And he's extracting all these things from the simplest expressions. The jasmine fragrant in the air, and he tells many things there. And then just to complete, I guess, this particular circle, he's saying, and Yogamaya, her service to assemble is qualified. He said, when a king tells the chef that he wants to enjoy mangoes, the head chef goes out and goes to a mango tree and starts picking mangoes, you know, like many, and then comes back. Then back in the kitchen, he's like, all right, this is good right now. This needs a little more ripening. This, you know, all right, oh, this one's very, you know, and separates them. This is Vishwanath. So he says, Yogamaya says, all right, these servitors, they're fully ripe. They're ready for this now. These others, little more ripening. And he said, and what is that like? What do you do with that mango that needs a little more ripening? You put like on the windowsill or in the brown paper bag, and it gets more sunlight and heat, and that brings it to the right position. Saying, so those are the gopis who, when they hear the flute song of Krishna, they go, they're prevented from going by their husbands, fathers, relatives, and they're like, they have to restrain them. And it's heartbreaking for them not to go. But what this does is it ignites a fire of separation so deep in their hearts, it brings them to the fully ripened position. And whereas the others who go, then this is the point one of the points I'm trying to make is, so just think about, we heard in the Gita, you know, and you can say, Bahunam Janmanam Antegana. After many, many lifetimes, someone may come to this understanding. And then what the that the birth, pastime, it's all lila, pastimes. And then what can happen? You can be transferred to the universe where these pastimes are going on, appear in the womb of a gopi, be born and, you know, enter those. What Guru Maharaj said, and once he compared to a dress rehearsal. Only Guru Maharaj can find these examples. If anyone else said it. We might dismiss it out of hand, but that's what he compared it to. You know, to like hone our understanding of this. So anyway, then you think, oh, this is amazing. Here it is, what we've heard about. All these chapters, we had the birth of Krishna, his childhood pastimes, Gopi Janabhastra Hari, he took away the clothes of the unmarried Gopi. It's going, and finally, here it is, it's finally come, the Madhura Rasa pastimes. They all assemble. And then what happens? Krishna said, this is inappropriate. And they're like, what? And he's saying, in the dead of night, you've left your husbands, your families, your children to meet in the dead of night in the deep Vrindavan forest. This is highly inappropriate. Anything like, you mean millions and millions of lifetimes, right? Long at last, they've like come to this point and you approach the supreme entity. And he's saying, you should return to your homes. And then what is their response to this? The Brajagopis, it's very beautifully described there. They're so crestfallen, heartbroken, they bow their heads and they start crying. And then it says, the tears are streaming the mascara and it's falling upon them and they're thinking, because remember, they know things, and they're thinking, Krishna, Prem is irresistible to him. He's irresistible, but he cannot resist Prem. Sri Krishna Karshini Chasa. Sri Rupa writes, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Krishna is a slave to Prem, actual devotion. And they're thinking, if he's rejecting us, that means we don't have Krishna Prem. So what was all the fuss about that we left our family, left all pretense, all false, all a show, we don't have the real thing. Na prema gandasti drapi mehoro. We don't have a scent of the fragrance of Krishna Prem. What to speak of a drop? We're phonies, we're frauds, we have no devotion, nothing for Krishna. This is their, and they're just crying, the mascara is running, and they're like, their heads are hung down, but they don't leave. And I recall Guru Maharaj saying, invoking Madhavendra Puri, because then his famous verse where he says, you know, let my family say I've lost my mind, let society say you've joined a cult. I'm kind of updating it a little. He's saying, you know, and he gives a whole list of people who are against the pursuit of Krishna consciousness. And he said, and add to that, that I didn't get it. I don't have it. Like, here, add this to your list. Not only did I do all these things, but the very thing I rejected you on, I don't have that. Add that to the list. Right? I'm not Krishna conscious. I didn't get it. He says, and the last line ends on Govinda Pada Spriham. He said, but I'm not going to budge an inch from this attempt. I have no other target, no other focus than my aspiration for the lotus feet of Govinda. But you can add to that. I don't have that. Otherwise, why am I holding on to this aspiration? That implies I don't have. So Guru Maharaj said, if you can honestly say, like, after all these years, after all this effort in the pursuit of Krishna consciousness, you can say, like, I don't have it. I haven't become Krishna conscious. I don't have it. If anything, I'm going down. Like, it seems I'm less than what I once was. Do you have an honest internal dialogue and admission that you don't have it? And then he said, you have no other target, goal, shelter, object in life, and you don't, in the face of that apparent failure, You don't give up the pursuit, you continue. Guru Maharaj said, then you just might be a devotee. He didn't say you are, he said, you might be. That's Guru Maharaj, right? So those Braja Gopis could be saying like, well, that's for us neophytes, or, you know, we're on the lowest rung, the least level of achievement. He said, no, if we can believe this or grasp, comprehend, digest that, no, this is the feeling of the greatest devotees. It's echoed in the sentiments of Mahaprabhu, who's mirroring the sentiments of Radharani's heart. Na prema gandasti darapi meharo. I don't have a scent of the fragrance of Krishna prema, what to speak of a drop. That type of self-abnegation, if you will, and uncertainty. Aslishabha paratam panastumam adarshanam mamratam karotuma. How you proceed when there's adarshan, not visible, not present, when every in the presence of so much Krishna, that's understandable. But in the apparent absence, what do you do? And that's hinted at, and that where Radharani is saying, if you're not, whatever, I offer you flowers, and what do? You stomp on them. You kick them away. It pleases you not to show yourself to me. I'm unconditionally, it's not based on you reveal yourself to me when I choose, or when inspires me, amuses me, gives me an... No, not like that. However you choose to deal with me, I'm unconditionally your servant. And so in the midst of that, you think, well, certainly this will get to Krishna. What is Krishna doing? Like, when they look up, he's gone. And you go like, oh, what kind of Lord is Krishna? And that's Guru Maharaj saying, then Vishwanath comes to our aid. And he says, why is it like this? Krishna is Bhava Grahi Janardana. It will say tonight, Jayame Janardane. Then Janardana appeared. And on a lighter note, that's what it says when Krishna is born in the text. When Janardana Maharaj would enter the veranda or anywhere, sometimes Gurudev would go, Jayamane Janardane, and then Janardana appeared, you know. And he could sing this whole section. But anyway, so Vishnu is saying that. So Krishna summoned Yogamaya for this Rasa Leela. And to put it in the context of what I said originally, so I'm saying like, why is it not in the first canto? No, it's in the 10th canto. And then when you finally get there, it appears to be a false start, right? It's there, and then like, and he rejects them and then vanishes. And you go, I waited 10 cantos for this, right? One could think that way. Then Vishnu says, Krishna is so addicted to gopi bhava, the love in the hearts of the Braja Gopis, but he likes it, the most tasteful type of gopi bhava or substance revealed by their hearts only comes out in the depths of separation. Right? As Guru Maharaj said, you know, we told in the little thing talk that hunger is the spice. Like, if you know, if you're real, I remember waiting for my mother to cook something, and you know, she like sometimes like give you a carrot or something like. And the whole thing they say, not to spoil your appetite. Like, if you get a little something out, you're not going to have the appetite when the real time comes. That's a crude example, but it's similar. So Krishna knows, like, oh, we could have Rasa Leela now, but it would be of a particular quality. But if their hearts are plunged into the abject depths of separation, where they're like approaching a death-like state, in separation from me when they say these things like tava katamritam tapta, you know, the topics of Krishna are life-saving nectar. They're consoling one another. And that's Sanatana Goswami always said, yes, but that life, don't hear it if it's not from a genuine devotee. This is not data transfer. It has to be from the heart and from the heart of a real source. And what is that? Bhav means heart. Gopi bhav, you could say, means gopi heart. Right? So the gopi's heart, they yield this most superior type of Krishna prema when they're plunged into the depths of separation. So it's Krishna knowing this, separates himself from them. And then Vishwanath says, he's thinking, if then, when it reaches its peak, you know, or depth, whichever way you want to express it, if I then appear, then what kind of a rasa leela are we going to have? Remember, he's the supreme enjoyer. He's figured all of this out, and it's just and it's not because he's omniscient. That's almost an insult to say, you know, he's omniscient. You know, save that for some other thing, right? I mean, it's true, but I mean, when I say almost, it goes like so far beyond like how we think of omniscience in terms of like Google. You know, it's not that type of, even Paramatma would be insulted by that type of like, you know, a source of all, just all information, data, not like that. That's what I mean to say when I say it's an insult. This is omniscience like ad infinitum. And so then, and seeing, so he's so addicted to that type of preem that they must be put into this situation. He must apparently vanish, plunge them into the depths of separation. Then when he reappears, it's so much more infinitely intense than it was before, then they begin these pastimes, right? And so that's why he says, hearing about this, bhavochada shrota manobhiramat, it's this beautiful life-saving nectar. So what did I want to say? Oh, so just a few things here from the beginning of the 10th canto. We're going to, that was my introduction. But no, because we are going to assemble again at midnight and have an arati and a little kirtan and everything. I just wanted to say a few things first about this day. And what I like to say, because there we can, and we will say the things that are normally said, but I thought, I should say things that I've heard that maybe not normally said, but come from Srila Guru Maharaj. And one of the most beautiful things he said before he joined is that he heard from the devotees when they said, you know, it's Krishna's appearance day. And they're like, yes. And they said, at midnight, he will be appearing in the heart of his devotee. That's how it was told to him. And by that, they meant Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. That's what they were looking forward to do. He will be appearing in the heart of Srila Saraswati Thakur. Grover said, I posted myself outside the door. You know, that's how he responds. That he's in the dark outside the door. He's there. He's going to be there. He's waiting for Krishna to appear in the heart of Srila Saraswati Thakur. And it's interesting, he said something, he said, Buddha Sattva. And he said, that means appearing in the heart of the devotee. Interesting. Because at the base, and I don't want to get into the whole thing here, but at the base, in the word Buddha, there's one is Buddhi, like intelligent, but there's another Buddha, which means to appear, like Bu. And anyway, that's BHU, but then there's B, they're similar. And it has to do with appearing. And what I like about that, and wanted to share with you here, was that I noticed many times in the Bhagavatam, you hear Krishna referred to as Bhuta Bhavana, right? Many times. I was surprised how many times. And it's also given in the beginning chapter of the introduction to the appearance of Krishna. And so, hopefully my notes will serve me well. So I'll just read a few things that I've highlighted. Yeah, like Soma Surayo Ragyam. That's the Soma Surayo, the Chandrabangsha, the moon. Again, remember the moon came out of the ocean, right? With Kormadev. Lakshmi, who is Sri, and the moon. Again, not incidental. What is being hinted at or alluded to? There are going to be pastimes between Sri and the Chandravangsha's crowning glory and epitome, Krishna. Right? That's what's coming from the nectar, Lakshmi, Chandra, and other things. And I saw that in Phnom Penh in the museum, because some of the things from Angkor Wat, as you know, are in the museum there. They were taken. But they show Lakshmi coming out of the ocean, and I went, oh, this is that. You know, meaning more specifically this. So, and he says, you know, Sri Krishna appeared in his dynasty, the Soma Vangsha. And he says, this, though the wonderful activities of Swayambhuvan and his dynasty were related in the fourth canto, they did not culminate in sweetness. What's the Sanskrit word for sweetness? Madhura. So he's saying, what was given, wonderful no doubt, but it didn't culminate in what? Madhura. Or Madhura Rasa. But this will, you know. So then he says, sweetness was finally attained with the descriptions of Krishna. And thus, the discussion of these dynasties became very prominent in the Bhagavatam. So then he's saying, oh, that's right. So Ramachandra, that was in the end of the ninth canto. Like, well, how would you follow that? With the birth of Krishna, the Chandravang. Now you've done that. Now we're going to express the ultimate sweetness. So it makes sense that the ninth canto concludes with the pastimes of Ramachandra. Then here, I like this. Bhagavan Bhuta Bhavana. And Vishnu says, Bhagavan Sri Krishna descends. Here's his interpretation of Bhagavan Bhuta Bhavana. So Bhagavan Sri Krishna descends to do what? Immerse the jivas, indicated by Bhuta, in what? Prema, indicated by Bhavana. If you look in all the Bhagavatam references up to this point, you wouldn't get, I would say, one would not likely get that impression that that's what it'll say something like the sustainer of the universe or, you know, some. He's saying, no. Why did he come? And why is it now? What's Bhuta Bhavana now mean here in this part of the Bhagavatam? Beautiful. The jiva, it's like jiva bhuta, mahabaho. You know, what does he come to do? You know, not to be their like maintainer in some abstract sense. No. Prem, he's come to immerse them in prem. Bhav, like we were saying, gopi bhav. Bhav is after bhav, when you have, you know, the bhav ankur that precedes prem, then you have, what is it? Prem, pranay, rag, anurag, bhav, mahabhav. He's talking about that. Then what does he say? Krishna gave pleasure to human society by revealing his beautiful, all-attractive form. Even after tasting Krishna's sweetness, however, people remained unsatisfied. Everyone desired to develop a taste to constantly taste the sweetness of Krishna. So, what does the Bhagavatam say? You know, Swamurti Loka Lavanya Nirmuktya Lochanam Rinam. The sweetness of Krishna's beauty steals the function of all the senses. The eyes no longer desire to see any other form. Drowning them in the ocean of his beauty, Shyamasundar gives them prem. Right? And that's why I told you in the last few months or when that about Hrishikesh. because all these names of Krishna are very meaningful, and I thought like Hrishikesh. And for so long we thought like Hrishika means senses, Isha the master. But see, here he's saying, I like this. He steals the function of all the senses. Meaning, what are the senses? As I told you before, the thing about aesthetikos in the Greek word originally meant what is perceivable by the senses. And time has come to mean the culture of beauty. That's Krishna conception, necessarily. Reality of the beautiful. So it means the most beautiful thing to be seen, the most beautiful sounds to be heard, the most beautiful taste, the most beautiful touch, every sensual and the most beautiful aroma, mind-stealing aroma, stealing the function of the senses. But really, Hrishikesh means that, as indicated by Rukmini, actually this is why you have senses. It's not optional. It may be in a relative, conditional, temporary sense that you have the option of cultivating the aesthetics of Krishna beauty or the person's places, things of this world. But for the devotees, and Sukadev, I remember, in the second canto, after he does that introduction, he starts talking like what we would used to refer to as like a hardcore brahmachari. You know, he starts saying, what good is it? The ears are like the punctured conch shell if you don't hear the glories of, what are the eyes like peacock's plumes? You know, they're useless if you're not seeing the divine form. He goes on and on like this, and you go like, and at first I thought, wow, that's kind of like the brahmachari way of, you know, like dismissing everything, slashing through it, dismissing any other possibility than Krishna culture. And so I thought, yeah, and he's Sukadev. But then you're reading the Madhya Leela and Krishna is saying, I need to summarize Mahaprabhu's pastimes, maybe I won't live to fully express them. So in Madhya 3, I believe, 2-3, he starts giving you this summary. And then, and it's all sentiments expressed from Radharani. And what is she, and what does Saraswati Thakur give in his purport? All of the slokas from Sukadev. And then you see, oh, Radharani is saying all these things with, if anything, greater intensity. What use are the eyes that do not behold the divine, the beauty of Krishna, the ears that do not hear the sweet sound of his name, the sound of his flute? So it's very beautifully expressed there, but still you could think like, oh, we're so far gone. You think like, oh, well, that's the position of these devotees saying, you know, you should exercise the Krishna option. But actually, if you listen more carefully to what they're saying and try to take it to heart, they're saying, actually, this is why you have sensory function. Because Krishna is Hrishikesh, which means two things. One is, he has all these sensory functions. The reasons you have eyes and the ability to see is to see the beauty of Krishna. You want to see the most beautiful thing? You keep searching in the objective world for that. And even when you think you found it, it disintegrates before your eyes. Look at your own time-lapse photography. Right? But Krishna is that. So that's one part of it that's very good news. So he can be seen, heard, tasted, touched, felt, the aroma, you know, all those things. But it also means then, Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate, that you can use your, to use your senses to serve Krishna, that's not a, a compromise, you're dovetailing because, you know, it'll be a way to save you from it. That may all be true on one level, but no, what we're being told is like, because he is all these things, that's actually what the function of your senses is to serve through seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, feeling, all these things. And the beauty of it is, although that reaches another level and magnitude in the spiritual world that's beyond what we could discuss or conceive, it's a miracle that you can do that now. Back to the dovetailing and the gradual, reconfiguration of your senses in terms of exploiting, the working senses. Anyway, we'll say units, but no, sense perception. Oh, and I say, because Mahayogi is here, I say, William Blake, he says, you know, when the doors of perception are cleansed, one will see reality as it is, and then he concludes, infinite. And then people leave it at that and go, wow, that's profound. You know, and then Blake is mystical. And I believe he's mystical and that's profound and all those things. But to get, you know, if we have the audacity to, you know, wish some Sukriti upon, you know, our beloved Blake and his profound mysticism. So then I would say this. So then let me tell me if I'm hearing you correctly. You're saying, so when the doors of perception are cleansed, they'll perceive the infinite, you know, as the, you know, infinite. Reality is infinite. So then, all right, well, these doors of perception, one of them is seeing, another one is hearing, another one is tasting, aroma, touch, all. So then that infinite must be able to, on some, when they're cleansed, as you say, then that means an infinite that you can see, make eye contact with, hear, has an aroma that you can smell, you can feel, embrace, touch, and everything that goes with sense experience. Am I reading you correctly that you're indirectly speaking about the personality of Godhead, reality the beautiful, otherwise known as Krishna? Yeah, yeah. You know, like, at least the lizards like me. Or like what I say. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Right. So, and I'm making a case for this, that it's not just an option, but rather it's the original function. And all other so-called options are an aberration, or whatever other word is like aberration, meaning not using them as they were intended to be used or to their full capacity. Then comes the Nivrittatar Shaira Sloka that we just mentioned. And let's see if he says anything. You know. Oh, and this is beautiful too. Remember, Parikshit Maharaj is fasting till death. No water, nothing. And what is he? And at one point, it's implied like, so they're going on, you know. Like my friends used to say to me when I came back from San Francisco, they go like, you know, you've been talking about this Krishna stuff for like 4 hours, and it's interesting, but we need a break, you know. So there's something similar to that with Sukadeva implying, like, he's not eating anything, he's not drinking anything, and they're like, and he says, I'm drinking the nectar of what of your descriptions. I'm not tired, I'm not thirsty, I'm not hungry, I'm feasting on what it is you're saying. Moving on. By taking the medicine of hearing Krishna's pastimes, one extinguishes nivritta, the thirst, trishna, for material life. That's beautiful. Gyanis, here's the thing. What about gyanis? For those, good, there's none here tonight. But there might be some digital gyanis, you know. And people say, well, you know, this, that, the other thing could be said, you know. I like this, Vishwanath says. Gyanis meditate, but they do not chant Krishna's glories. A one-liner, dismissed. Because you're going like, yeah, what? Oh, you're right. Like, whatever it is they know or appear to know, or they do not chant Krishna's glories. Liberated, pure devotees continually glorify the practice of hearing Krishna katha over gyan and other processes. Then upa indicates intense continuous glorification. How intense does it become? Guru Maharaj's hidden treasure of the sweet absolute, when he says the famous nutshell sloka, machchita madgata prana boreantas parasparam katayan tras tamam nityam tushyanti cha ramanti cha. There's trishna, saying. So when the devotees talk about Krishna like this, they're actually relishing something. This is amazing. You know, we're on the Mat Parikrama, Navaditam Parikrama. Some might have even been there that year. And they decide to go to Mayapur. And usually we just go to Prabhupada Samadhi and don't interfere with, but for some reason this year we go in the temple room. And knowing that Parikramis are visiting, they blast a Prabhupada lecture. So when you come with your, the idea is like, stop your kirtan and say, hey, we're listening to Prabhupada, you know. I mean, I figured this out pretty quickly. But anyway, so I'm like, okay, but I happen to know that lecture. Tada rajastamo bhava kamalobadayasya chaitayar etayar anabidham stitam sattve, and then Prabhupada goes, prasidati. And the way he says this word, it's as if he's chewing on some kind of incredible nectarine substance. You're going like, what's, like when you see someone eating or, and you go, like, I'd like to get some of that, whatever that is. I made the mistake of doing that with Gurudev once, and Gurudev, he had very like childlike qualities at times. And so he has this bowl, and he's like, with a spoon, he's going like, and like he's targeting me. He did things like that. And I'm over in the corner, like, it looks to me like he's eating ice cream, you know. And he goes, Maharaj, you want? And I'm going, yeah, you know. And he goes, Coca, bring Maharaj, bring Goswami Maharaj, you know. And I'm going, wow, this is going to be, and he's, keeps like licking the spoon, he's relishing the, scooping the, you know, like, and then like I get mine, I look down at this and go, that's interesting. And, you know, he keeps looking at me and I go, I take this and I'm kind of like smiling but crying at the same time. I go like, and he goes, you like? And what it was rice powder with gur and mustard oil. For him, that was like candy. You know, for me, I was like, like, do I have to eat all of that? You asked for it. You wanted it. You know. So that's called imitation. And only the qualified can relish these superior substances. So, unlike other medicine, this medicine does not have a bitter taste. I think I mentioned that. Then moving on. Oh, now that I'm drinking Harikatamritam, the nectar of the pastimes of Hari, I've given completely food and water. Hunger and thirst no longer affect me. Then it says, Mukamboja, Sukadeva is like the moon in that it drips nectar, bestows joy, destroys darkness in the hearts of the listeners. This is all Vishwanath. Just look how he extracts from the slokas. Look at that one statement. It's like nectar dropping from the moon of the mouth bestows what? Joy, destroys darkness in the hearts of... It also means that Purikit, being thirsty for the pastimes, Harikatamritam, is like a chakora bird who drinks moonlight. That's beautiful. Vasudeva Kata Prajna. This is a good one. The Ganges emanating from the Lord Lord Krishna. This is all leading up to the birth of Krishna. It's going to happen two chapters later. We're going to do that. Similarly, questions about the pastimes, characteristics of Vasudeva Krishna. Three varieties of men are purified. The speaker, preacher, one who inquires, and the people in general who listen. And this brings me back to something I didn't finish from before. And we sometimes say, and the place in which the transaction takes place. So Sanatana Goswami say, but don't hear this from the non-qualified. Then what is it like? Milk touched by the lips of a serpent. And for the longest time we thought like, oh, this is one of those examples of which there's no actual thing in life, right? But recently, 2 weeks ago, online, a woman, a cobra poisoned the milk bag of a cow. The mother milked the cow, nursed her baby, and there was death. This is online. I went like, oh my God, there's that sloka alive in our environment at this time. And Sanatana saying, it's like that. Right? So then you say, oh, then it means, oh, back to unmotivated. That was the other thing. Unmotivated, uninterrupted, right? Anyabhilashita shunyam gyana. No ulterior motive for this discussion. So when the professional reciter wants to speak Bhagavatam before Babaji Maharaj, you go, no, he's like, somehow he gets pushed into that situation. And the person's going on there. He just wants to add his list in his book. See, I've spoken the Bhagavatam for Gaura Kishorenath Babaji, and my rates are reasonable. Really, that's his position. So as he finishes, Babaji Maharaj, what does he say to his assistant? Get some cow dung and some cow urine and cleanse this place. And the people are bewildered, saying, well, wait. It says there in the Bhagavatam, the speaker's purified, the listener, the inquirer, those who are hearing, and we hear, and the place in which the transaction. And Babaji Maharaj is saying, get cow dung and cow urine and cleanse this place. But he just spoke the Bhagavatam, and we're told, what does Babaji Maharaj say? You heard, Krishna Katha, but all I heard was money, money, money. Now, say someone had a tape recording. They could say, no, we've got the tape. He didn't say anything about money. It's all about Krishna and the gopi, Then you miss the point. Right? It's what is the motive of that speaker? That has to also be there. It's not data transfer. It's the heart-to-heart transaction. And I'm just skipping ahead. The topics of Hari purify the speaker, the inquirer, and the listener in descending order. This is Vishwanath. Harikatha is most purifying for the speaker, then the inquirer, and then the listener. This part always makes me laugh. It's just kind of on the... when Brahma, before the appearance of Krishna, Revati goes to... with her father. They want to go to Brahma to find her an appropriate husband. But remember, she was born in the Satyuga. So she was around 17 feet tall. That's like, what, 5 meters? Think about a 5-meter girl. And don't say we have them and, you know, like. So a 5-meter girl. And she's looking like, who will be her husband? So they go to Brahmaloka, and we're told Brahma, there are these Gandharvas singing and dancing, and I kid you not, the singers' names were Ha Ha and Hoo Hoo. Ha Ha and Hoo Hoo. They were singing, and during one of their songs, remember, it's Brahmaloka, time difference, so like 15 minutes. By the time they were done, Satyayuga was finished. So now you're in Treta Yuga. And he's going, I'd like to find a suitable... And they're saying, I'm just trying to condense the story, that they say, the only suitable husband for your daughter is Balaram. So they bring her to Balaram, but because she's from Satyayuga and she's 5 meters tall, and Balaram is around 4... He, by his mystic Balaramic potency, reduced her size to a very charming, manageable, appropriate, wife appropriate, around 3.5, you know, and that, but like less than him. And everything was fine after that. That's from Vishwanath. But anyway, suitable groom. So they're going, you know, the distress of the earth. As I meant, it's like, oh, Paritranaya Sarunam Vinashaya Chaduskritam. Right? 4th chapter, he's saying, why? Like, to protect the devotees, annihilate the miscreants, the non-devotees, etc. How does Bhaktivinoda, so we think, that's Bhagavad Gita. And what we will sing later. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, what does he say? Braja jana palana asura kula nashana. Same thing, but more specific and sweeter. Braja jana palana. Oh, he protects the braja jana. Oh, palana, palaka, gotritve. Oh, you mean like the sharanga sharanagati? This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Who has the ability to like, take Gita, Bhagavad, everything, and you can sing it and dance to it. My Braja Jana Palana, Asurakul Nashana. Same thing, but very sweet. So then you think, what is the connecting thread? When Krishna, he's going to Mathura, as we'll learn later, after all this story, and we know it began with, you know, the wedding of Vasudeva Devaki, and Devaki's his sister, and then Yogamaya, Kamsa, you fool, you don't know, you know, the 8th son of Devaki will kill you, you know, and he stops and takes the divine voice and that, I mean, the rest is history, but we know, and then Vasudeva talks him out of it, saying, hey, we'll bring each child to you. It wasn't the first, second, third. It's the 8th. We have time. We'll work this out. Gives them some atmagyan about life, existence, fate, you know, karmic circumstance. Kamsa calms down. All right, deal. We have a deal. You know, Then one by one, they have these children. They bring them to him. Kongs are thinking like, oh, first, oh, cute little baby. And first one, no harm. And Narada's impatient. He's like, this is going to take forever. Like, we want Krishna now. Like, and because you think like, Narada's a little devious, but in a good way. So, you know, he's like, hey, Kongsa, what? You know, like, I wouldn't trust any of them. I mean, if you ask me. They may have said the eighth, but who knows what's going on over there in Nandagokul and all, or, you know, not yet. I jumped ahead, but like, you know. And then what does it lead to? Infanticide. He kills that baby. Next one kills the baby. Six babies are killed. Six or seven. Then what happens? Rohini, Balaram appears. And Devaki, woman of Devaki. And what are we told? Vishwanath saying, wherever Krishna goes, first Balaram appears. What does he do? Like when we would do. He makes Shingasan, everything's perfect. And what is that? His expansion is Ananta. So he's transferred to the womb of Rohini and Nandagokul, who's one of the wives, secondary wives. So it appears that there's been a miscarriage, right? But there now the throne, the Shingasan in the heart of Devaki is ready for Krishna. So Ananta's there, who is the Shingasan, the garment, you know, is in his expansions. Then Krishna appears. And what are we told? That Devaki, and it shows how beautiful and simple-hearted he is, he appears in a four-armed Vishnu form. And she's thinking, like, don't let them see you like that, with the four arms and the crown and all. Like, she's thinking they'll kill her baby, but she does. This is Jnana Shunya Bhakti. She doesn't think like, well, if he's four armed Vishnu, that will be impossible. He can use Sudarshan. You know, he has so many weapons at his disposal besides his omnipotency. But she's so sweet. She's saying, she's begging him, please assume the form of a human baby. They're like, and Vishwanath says, but Krishna says, no. When Kamsa sees me, he'll be overwhelmed by the sweetness of my beauty. And she goes, he will not. Trust me on this. He's not going to think, oh, how cute, sweet. His heart is not going to melt. He's not going to see sweetness. I know that, you know, he's my brother, okay? I know him. Like, no, please become a... And Krishna, like... And Vishwanath says, yes, actually, he said, when... He talks about Keshi, you know, and that's the demon where... He said, Krishna is sweetness personified. So normally, if he were to shove his arm down your throat, you could say you would be like choking on the sweetness of it. He's saying, not so for Keshi. He perceived that sweetness as a hot iron rod that, like, you know, and he exploded from contact with that sweet form of. He said, so she has a point. So then Krishna assumes a human-like form. Then she calms down, and due to the exhaustion of childbearing, she goes to sleep. And then Yoga Maya puts all the guards to sleep. Then Vasudeva thinks, like, he gets the inspiration, we've got to protect Krishna. Picks up Krishna, and we're told, all the locks open, the locks unlock, the doors open, and Vasudeva is on his way to Nandagokul, sees the Jamuna River, and we're told in the Bhagavatam that as the ocean parted for Ramachandra, the river parts for Vasudev, he goes through, Ananta's formed an umbrella, which is part of his Seva, and Ananta, because it's raining, gentle rain, but raining nonetheless, or sometimes more intense. Then he goes to Nanda Gokul, and we're told there, from Sanatana Goswami and others, that Yashoda had given birth, sometimes they say twins, but at least minimally, to a baby girl, right? But twins, a little boy, little girl. So when he brings Krishna, Krishna's absorbed into the boy, right? Who is Krishna? So it's Vasudev Krishna from Mathura being absorbed in Swayam Bhagavan Krishna of Vrindavan. And Yogamaya, as the girl, he takes and takes her back to the prison cell. When the news comes that it's the eighth child of Devaki, Kansa is ready and sees, to his chagrin, surprise, not a boy but a girl. But he's just totally paranoid anyway, takes out a sword, he's going to kill the baby, and then, you know, Durga comes out. And Kansa, you fool, the eighth son of Devaki has already, you know, appeared and will be the death of you. Mark my words, you know. So then Nanda Yashoda, they enjoy Vatsalya Rasa pastimes with Krishna, baby Krishna, to the delight of the ladies there as well. Then he gets a little older, he and Balaram, Sakya Rasa with the cowherd boys, those pastimes. So Kumar, Poganda, and then when he's older, the pastimes with Radharani and Brajagopis, Kishore. Right. And after some time, then we're told Akura comes, whose name we're told can either mean like who is not cruel, or can mean never was there one more cruel. Because why? He takes Krishna out of Vrindavan. So you can understand, he's not going to get a holy card from the Brajagopis of Vrindavan. You know, he's on their like public enemy number one list for taking Krishna away. So when Uddhava returns later to deliver a message on behalf of Krishna to assuage the separation they're feeling, when they see the empty chariot outside of Nanda Yashoda, which is Uddhava's first stop, they become furious. And they're saying, what? That Kamsa? He ripped our hearts from our bodies. Now all is left is the rotting carcasses of the Brajagopis in separation of Krishna. Now he sent Akura back to put those rotting carcasses on this chariot to take them back to Mathura and throw them like as offerings on a funeral pyre. They're very upset. When Uddhava comes out, they're going, oh, he looks like Krishna. He wears Krishna's clothes, and he says, and I have a message from Krishna. Oh, you know, let's get, you know, they're all excited. But of course, that's when Radharani exhibits the madness of Brahma Gita. But, so before that, when Akura comes and takes Krishna away, we're told, what are the Brajagopis doing? First of all, Yashoda can't believe that that Nanda has somehow agreed to this. And it's all, you know, yoga maya. But the Brajagopis were told, they're holding the reins of the horses, throwing themselves in front of the chariot wheels. They're trying to stop this. But somehow, you know, Leela Shakti, yoga maya, they take Krishna away. And they're plunged in unbearable separation. Then Krishna goes, but he's telling them, I have some, as Gurudev would say, some job in Mathura, you know. So, and then what do we hear? When he arrives there, Kamsa, he set up the Kamsa Olympics to entice Krishna and Balaram and to participate. And he has this strategy to kill him. Because we know previously he sent Putana to kill the babies. That didn't work. Then, you know, Aghasura. But who is there, you know, Putana, Ahobaki, Bucky, Bakanuja, Baka, Bakasura, their brother and sister, Bucky, Putana, Baka, and their little brother's name was Bucky, Bakanuja. And that's why I say to the mothers in the audience, don't name your child Bucky, Bakanuja. Just don't do it. So the whole family is rotten to the core. Bucky, Putana, Baka, and Bucky, Bakanuja, their little brother, who's Aghasura. So, and each time it ends unsuccessfully, and Krishna's Brajajanapalana saves the devotees, Asurakula Nashana. Same outcome. But now, he's gone to Mathura for some job, and on his way there, Kamsa has different, you know, like the three rings of Moscow. You know, like this first will be Kuvayalapida, the elephant. Then it'll be the wrestlers. Then at last, if they make it through there, I'll take care of it myself. But, oh, the first thing they do, so they're coming from Vrindavan, and they're dressed as they are wont to do, in cowherd dress, and they see the king's tailor. And so Krishna's like, oh, tailor, you know, like, and he's like pushing the king's clothes. He's like, who, what are you upstarts? This is His Majesty Kamsa, you know, Maharaj Kamsa Ki Jai Ho. You know, these are his clothes, and you know, you have the audacity. And Krishna could see he's not going to be able to reason with this person. So we're told he just beheads him with his, not even Sudarshan Chakra, just his hand. So that's rather unfortunate, you know, but time is of the essence. And then they're going through the clothing rack, and Krishna's going like, Balaram, this will look good on you. Hey, Sridham, you know, they're like putting on these clothes. Oh, this I think is good for me, you know. Now they're all wearing Kamsa's clothes, Krishna, Balaram, and the cowherd boys. Then what happens? The next person they meet? Kubja, otherwise known as Trivakra, because she's a hunchback, bent in three places. She's a hunched over woman. And this is where it gets more interesting. Vishwanath said, she's Bhu Shakti. Who is Bhu? The earth, right? Bhumi. Why has Krishna come? To relieve the earth from the burden of demonic kings, right? What the weight of the burden of these kings? What has it done to the earth or her personification? She is a hunchback at present. She's hunched over due to that weight, right? And what did he do as Varaha avatar? When the earth was in a compromised position in the netherworld, with his tusks, he lifted her up and put her in her rightful position. So when they approach Kubja, and she is the aromatis of Kamsa, she has, and what do we say? Bhagavad Gita, punyo gandak prithivyam cha, the fragrance of the earth. Right? So what? She's an aromatis. And what is? And Krishna's saying, might we have a few drops? You know, we just come from Vrindavan and we're outfitting ourselves, and some perfume would really be in order. And what is, unlike the tailor, she's like, here, these are my best perfumes. They're all meant for the kings. You know, these are my best ones. And like, considering your, you know, skin tone, and like, I think this will be appropriate for you, you know, for Balaram, this you, I'm seeing more of this spectrum, you know, like she's passing out these perfumes, you know, that are just right, right? And then, and she's looking up from her hut and sees the beauty of Krishna. And he's thinking like, she's given us everything, and from her heart. So I feel, you know, mercifully inclined. So what does he do? He takes his fingers with his lotus feet, steps on her feet, and like those tusks of Varaha, lifts her up. You know, and she's like, and she's no longer a hunchback. And then everyone notices she's this extremely beautiful, voluptuous woman, right? And due to the touch of Krishna and his lotus, and she's now imbued with amorous sentiments and invites Krishna to her place. And Krishna says, some job we have, because they say some of the cowherd boys are going like giggling because she's now like very animated, right? These are all acceptable terms. And Krishna's saying, I have some job to take care of when that is finished. Then we, because like, why should we go to your house for snacks? You know, we're like, anyway, when we're done, we can go there. And so that's another indication of things to come. Anyway, then when they pass her, there's Kuvaya Lapida, this huge, maddened elephant who's being goaded by his keepers with what? But elephant goads. You know, they're stabbing, you know, getting him angrier and angrier. And then he sees Krishna and they're going like, you know, get him. And the elephant runs after Krishna. And Krishna is very dexterous. He's like sort of dancing around. And the elephant's hears Krishna go like into the ground. Like, and he's like stuck, and then Krishna pulls them back out. And then he's like, where is Krishna? Krishna's underneath him, like, I'm here, you know, like, turns around, runs, you know, he keeps trying to do this. Krishna's playing with him, exhausting him, until at last Krishna grabs him by the tail and starts body slamming him because he is the omnipotent absolute, right? So he's like, and the earth is shaking, the elephant's becoming unconscious. And what does he do? He has these huge tusks. So Krishna plucks one of the tusks from him and then turns it around and stabs him with it. And it's really a bloody mess. There's blood everywhere. And blood on the tusk and just, you know, but he's there, dead. And now Krishna has one of the tusks on his shoulder. It's dripping blood. And then they enter. And then Kamsa is like looking and going like, oh, Lord. Like, plan B. You know, like, and he sees like, hey, those are my clothes. You know, like, and not only are they my clothes, like you see the elephant tusk with the blood dripping down, like, all right, things are not going according to plan. Now the wrestlers are there. And then we're told, the ladies, they see like, they're thinking, this is unfair. Because these wrestlers are huge. They're gigantic. They're like giants. And Krishna and Balaram are relatively small in comparison. And what the ladies are saying is true. They say, this is not a fair fight. So what they're thinking, because Krishna and Balaram are so beautiful and delicate and sweet and these men are vicious and huge and you know, they're, and what are we told? Something the Guru Maharaj like very much, this sloka that says 10 different views of Krishna. Malanam, Ashanirninam, Naravarastrinam, Smaro, Murtiman, Gopanam, Swajanam, Satam, Shatipujam, Shastra, Chapitro, Shishu, mrityu bojo pate viradavidusam tatvam param yoginam vrishninam paradevate tividino, something, sagraja. What is seen? That mala nama shini, the wrestlers, when they look at Krishna and Balaram, it says like thunderbolts are striking them. They're going like, they know this apparent size difference is meaningless. This is not going to end well. Mala nama shini, ninam nadabara. Then the men see, they're like, is this not the most extraordinary, the epitome of what a man can be that we've ever seen? Like, they're admiring from a male perspective. Nadabara, strinam smaro murtiman. And the women are going, it's Cupid personified. And they're all imbued with amorous sentiments, the ladies. Then, Srinam Smurtiman, Gopanam Swajanam. And the Gopas, they're thinking like, you know, that's our Krishna, he's from Vrindavan. They have like the t-shirts, you know, Vrindavan, Gokul, you know, like, you know, he's from our hometown, go Krishna, go Balaram, you know. He belongs to us. Like when we said that to those girls and Kaliharad and Vrindavan, they talk about Krishna as though he's theirs. This is still like 12-year-old girls in Vrindavan, like that they own, he's our Krishna. And they're very happy that you appreciate their Krishna, who they own. You know, he's like their property. Gopanam swajanam sadam shitipujam. Shastra, that the Shastra means, in this sense, the rod of chastisement has finally appeared. Pitra Shishu and Vasudeva and Devaki, who are shackled, see their son, Krishna. And it's a pitiful scene. And then what? Vrishninam Paradevate, the Vrishnis. See the crowning glory of the Vrishni dynasty. The Paramatma yogis see the supreme Paratattva, the object of their yogic performance. The Virata Vidusam, others are seeing like in a sense, like Virat Rupa, that kind of aspect. And, you know, in the company of his brother, so they'll, Vishwanath and others will say, 10 different perspectives. You know, Shanta, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, and all sorts of variations. One Krishna revealing himself in these different ways. When the ladies in Mathura saw Krishna, it says that they saw beauty personified, Lavanyasaram, Asamordva, Ananya Siddham, Drigbi, Pibantu, Urnaba, Suyabasa. I forget how it goes, but it says that they saw beauty, the creme de la creme of beauty. And what are their thoughts? Oh, Gopanam, that they wonder, oh, Gopya Tapasya. What tapasya did the gopis do that we're seeing Krishna for a moment and losing our minds? They see him all the time. What tapasya did they do to achieve that position? So they're immediately appreciating them. So all these things, the point is, all of these things are going on simultaneously while Krishna's about to kill Kamsa. Right? So it's not just one thing. Like, we're about to see the death of Kamsa. All these different sentiments toward Krishna from the assembled group, the whole spectral reins of rasa and loving affection, and he's just in the throes of one particular pastime. And we're told that Kamsa, he knew things were not going to go well this day. When he woke up in the morning and looked in the mirror, and there was no reflection. And we're told, that's a bad sign. And then he noticed his shadow had holes in it. That doesn't normally happen. And just the whole, like, he's like seeing, ooh, like, this is not good, you know. Then Krishna shows up wearing his clothes, blood soaked, the whole thing. Then Krishna and Balaram easily dispense with the wrestlers. And what's interesting, he finally turns to Kamsa. He sees his mother and father over there in shackles. And unlike other pastimes, this is not long and drawn out. It's just described. He goes up to the viewing stand, grabs Kamsa, and kills him on the spot. That's it. No, there's no big song and dance, a back and forth. He just goes up there, drags him from the viewing stand, and kills him on the spot. It's over. Right? Yeah, yeah. Kamsa's mother is allowed to join them in Dwarka, and that provides a lot of comedic elements in the Brihad Bhagavatamritam later, because when they're talking about Krishna returning to Vrindavan, she'll say, they didn't even buy him a pair of shoes. Because they don't wear shoes in Vrindavan. That's the thing. You know, and they go, what? And she goes, like, how much does cow herding go for? She's saying, like, on an hourly basis. Because they're saying, okay, tabulate it up, we'll pay you off. Like, he's going back to Vrindavan. But she provides this comedic element to try and stop this from happening. And saying, they have no appreciation for him. After all that cow herding, years of cow herding, didn't even give him a pair of shoes. What to speak of some sort of compensation. That's Kamsa's mother. But anyway, so... Hare Krishna. On that note, we will, I think, conclude here with one song, take a little break, assemble at 12 o'clock. At that time, we'll just read the like few verses that lead in, it's like eight verses that lead into the Jayamane Janardane, Krishna appears. Then we'll have the arati, and we will sing, I will sing, Yasamati Nandana Jayarana Madhava, and a little turn it over to you. That will be our celebration, because Krishna appears at midnight. All right? Okay.
Should I offer before arati?
What do you mean, offer before arati?
I mean,
food.
Yeah.
Some milk sweets, that kind of thing. Because as Guru Maharaj would say, that's Krishna's favorite food. So milk sweets. And he's just being born, you know, so that would be appropriate. Yes. So, what's someone saying? Oh, I wanted to sing... Because we will sing Jasomati Nandana then at midnight. Right now, I'd like to sing Jayo Radhe, Jayo Krishna, Jayo Vrindavan. Jayo Radhe, Jayo Krishna, Jayo Vrindavan.
Right, but I'm saying in America, it's the day before, it's not even Janmashtami yet.
Just morning.
The morning time. Okay, now I understand. And I just read these verses right here, which Gurudev, being Gurudev, he could sing them by heart. And just listen. I'll read the Sanskrit too, because it's very nice. Sri Sukha Uvancha, Atta Sarva Gunopeta Kala Parama Shobana, Parama Shobana, Yaryeva Jana Janmakshyam Santaksha Grahatarakam Disha Prase Dur Ganganam Nirmala Du Ganodayam Mahi Mangala Bhuishta Pura Grama Vrajakara Nadya Prasanna Salila Radha Jal Ruha Shriya Dwi Jali Kula Sanada
Savaka Vanarajaya Bhavo Vayu Sukasparsha Punya Gandava Hasuti Agyayascha Dvijatinam Santastatta Samindata Mamangshasyan Prasanani Sarunam Asura Druham Jayame Jane Tasmin Nedur Dumdruvayo Samam. The Dumdruvi is the Dumdruvi. Thereafter, at the auspicious time to the appearance of the Lord, the entire universe was surcharged with all the good qualities of goodness, beauty, and peace. The constellation Rohini appeared, as did stars like Ashvini. The sun, the moon, and other stars and planets were very peaceful. All directions appeared extremely pleasing, and the beautiful stars twinkled in the cloudless sky. Decorated with towns, villages, mines, and pasturing grounds, the earth seemed all auspicious. The rivers flowed with clear water, and the lakes and vast reservoirs full of lilies and lotuses were extraordinarily beautiful. As you see, we have the lilies and lotuses assembled here. And the trees and green plants full of flowers, leaves pleasing to the eyes, birds like cuckoo, the cochineal. Swarms of bees began chanting with sweet voices for the sake of the demigods. A pure breeze began to blow, pleasing the touch, the sense of touch, and bearing the aroma of flowers. And when the Brahmins engaging in ritualistic ceremonies ignited their fires, according to Vedic principles, the fires burned steadily, undisturbed by the breeze. Thus, when the birthless Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was about to appear, the saints and Brahmins, who had always been disturbed by demons like Kansa and his men, felt peace within the core of their hearts, and kettle drums simultaneously vibrated from the upper planetary system. Just two more verses. Jagu Kinra Gandharvas Tushtubu Siddhacharana Vidyadarascha Namritur Asaru B. Samanmuda. The Kinaras and Gandharvas began to sing auspicious songs. The Siddhas and Charanas offered auspicious prayers. And the Vidyadharis, along with the Apsaras, began to dance in jubilation. And this is the last two verses. Mumuchur Munayo Deva Sumanamsi Mudambita Mandam Mandam Jaladara Jagar Jur Anusagaram Nishite Tamakubhute Jayamane Janardane Deva Kim Deva Rupinyam Vishnu Sarva Guhashaya Abhirasi Jita Pratyam Dishindur Iva Pushkala. The demigods and great saintly persons showered flowers in a joyous mood, and clouds gathered in the sky and mildly thundered, making sounds like those of the ocean's waves. Then the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Jayamane Janardane, Krishna, Vishnu, situated in the heart of everyone's, core of everyone's heart, appeared from the heart of Devaki in the dense darkness of night, like the full moon rising on the eastern horizon, because Devaki was in the same category as Krishna in every respect. Jai Sri Krishna Janmashtami Ki.